Welcome into a special episode of the Crimson Corner Podcast. We're going live here on KSL Sports Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter pages. And I am Trevor Allen. I'm your host. I'm the Crimson Corner Podcast host and Utes Insider for KSLSports.com. Happy to be joined by a good friend of mine. I've gotten to know him over the years working in this business. And he is a Pac-12 host on radio. He now has a bunch of other ventures. Formerly of the Pac-12 Network is Mike Yammer, how are you, man?
Doing great. I got to be honest with you, man. Like, I don't know if I'm totally used to hearing former with Pac-12 Network, but it is the reality of the situation. But thrilled to be on with you and still very fortunate that I get to talk about the Pac-12 conference. And you mentioned the radio stuff. So, still on Pac-12 radio. And they'll have to kick me away from the conference in order for me to stop being associated with a lot of our schools and a lot of our players. So, but appreciate you having me on, man.
Well, you've obviously been one of the big voices and obviously one of the main faces around the conference as you're at every big sporting event around the conference, whether it's basketball, football. But I know that when the tough news hit that you were no longer a member of the Pac-12 Network, I know at least from a lot of the people who I follow here in Salt Lake City, and I'm sure you've gotten it around the country, really, you know, reaching out to you when that news hit. Yeah.
Trevor, I'll be honest with you, man, just totally overwhelming, humbling in every sense of the word. You spent 8 years at a network and, Trevor, I couldn't be more proud of a lot of the things that we were able to accomplish. But at the same time, I mean, look, I read the news, I hear what people say and, you know, people talked about the distribution issues and obviously that was an issue, but the amount of outpouring, it's, you wouldn't have known. And just so many nice words that people had to say. I can't thank everyone enough. In Salt Lake City in particular, there's such a strong social media connection. That team on that campus, what they do is remarkable. I'd make an argument they're probably the best social media team in the conference, maybe even in the country. And you can see the passion behind the fan base for the Utes. And over the years, they, anytime we did something on the network, they were always kind of interacting with it. And every time I was in Salt Lake City, I mean, people who would, wave and stop by and say hi, it really was, it was a game changer. It meant the world to have that many people that were paying attention to what we were doing. I'm sad I'm not there anymore. And I hope I get to head back to Salt Lake City pretty soon. But I just honestly, man, I can't thank everyone enough for the amount of support that they have given me over the last couple of weeks and months.
For those of you tuning in live here, put in your comments, your questions for Mike. We'll ask him as we go along through this episode. We're going to talk about some of the big news that's going on within the Pac-12 and that there's a big meeting coming up on Thursday. We'll talk about that. But first, Mike, I want to go back 6 months ago. You were in Las Vegas.
Oh, yeah.
T-Mobile Arena. And you just finished your very first day. It was the first round of the Pac-12 men's basketball tournament. And then you then come on TV for the second round and announce that the rest of the tournament was canceled. And that was when sports shut down and obviously started locally here when the Utah Jazz were on the road against the Oklahoma City Thunder. And that was when it all came crashing down. Just
for sure.
Take us through. Can you believe first that it's been 6 months since that day? And did you honestly think that we would be at this point where the college football season would have been threatened by this?
No, not at all, man. And the fact that you had said, we were talking off air about this. I mean, 6 months, 6 months, Trevor, is legitimately in Vegas the last time I had a meal indoors outside of my own place. I mean, I live in the Bay Area. So that's where our studios are in San Francisco. And the city still doesn't have indoor dining. Everything is still outdoors. And things just being as slow moving as they are, I still can't get over it. It's been 6 months, but that whole time was really surreal here. Cause Trevor, even heading into the Pac-12 tournament in Vegas, I think there was some apprehension for even doing our shows there. If you recall, FS1, so it alternates who gets the Pac-12 tournament in Vegas, FS1 or ESPN. This past year was an FS1 year, and they had decided, I think about 2 weeks before the tournament, that they weren't going to send their crew onto site. We were going to be doing our studio shows there. They were going to be doing theirs and then obviously have their game crew. They only sent their game crew. And I think people were nervous on the network side of Pac-12 Network about even going there. We flew there day one. It was weird, right? Like there's a different dynamic and there's so many unknowns because you don't know about COVID and you hear about everything that's happening overseas and in China. And you just didn't know, you know, how serious a threat it was. And then the NBA stuff. So day one of the Pac-12 tournament, I'll never forget this. I'll never forget this probably for the rest of my career. What was interesting about that day was the day unfolds. And I think even, excuse me, for me personally, you know, we were doing our show courtside, like literally 5-6 feet all away from the court. And the first game, it's not packed in T-Mobile, so you can sit wherever you want. And I remember I was sitting, you know, maybe 4 or 5 seats away from the Tinkle sisters at Oregon State. So Trace and Wayne Tinkle, Wayne's daughters, you know, they used to frequent a lot of Oregon State games, and they're a couple seats from us. And Matt Muehlbach and Earl Watson were the analysts on that show. And they're, you know, we're all kind of spaced out a little bit. And there was a dude 2 rows back from me, and he was coughing. And normally you're not even fazed by it. I mean, you don't even think about something like that, but you know, I was hypersensitive to it. And I said, you know what? I don't know if this is for me. So I just watched the entire day of basketball on our set, and our guys, Muehlbach and Earl, would tease me because every commercial break, I would take hand sanitizer and, you know, kind of use it. And they'd say, Mike, you're the only one touching your microphone. And they were right. But I kept doing it every single break. And as the day was unfolding, you start saying, you're hearing these reports about, you know, different areas, you know, different teams that are dealing with this. And as, you know, the news with the NBA, and in a lot of ways, kudos to David Silver. I mean, you want to talk about leadership at the top, to be able to pull the plug when you don't know what the deal is. I mean, that's a scary thing. You know, college basketball, especially because it's March, like, they didn't want to do that. In fact, on day one of the Pac-12 tournament, Trevor, they had initially said no fans for the NCAA tournament. And we all just said, what, like, are you kidding me? Like, that's, you know, crazy. Like, we're really to that point. And sure enough, we were. And then when the NBA with the Rudy Gobert situation, they pulled the plug on their games. And you know that better than anyone being in Utah. That's when the league said, you know what, we're not doing this. And I'll never forget too, heading out of the arena on day one of the tournament. We were walking out. It was Muehlbach and Earl and you know, some other folks. And I turned to them. I said, do you think we play tomorrow? And it was like this huge unknown. And sure enough, you wake up in the morning, the phone's got, you know, a million messages on it. And oh my God, it's like, you know, we gotta figure this out. We had a sort of this emergency meeting in the morning, and it was a wrap. And think about, Trevor, like, this is the longest winded answer to your question, by the way, and I apologize.
No, this is great.
It's a really, it was just crazy. I'd never experienced anything like that in my entire career. And you would ask, like, did you think football would be impacted? You know, hell no, no, man. I thought I'd head home. I mean, at that point, Trevor, I didn't even feel great about flying home. I mean, talk about things messing with your head a little bit. I was like, all right, Vegas to San Francisco, it's drivable, right? So I was, as soon as I saw my phone blowing up, I was like, all right, we're not playing. So if we're not playing, how am I getting home? And I called the rental car company from the hotel room before I went to T-Mobile to have the meeting and secured a car, because I'm thinking to myself, all right, maybe I don't want to get into a flight. I wanted that option. And you know, sure enough, I ended up flying home, but it was so weird. But I figured, look, man, we're 2-3 weeks down at worst. We're in the middle of June and we're back at it. Here it is, man. I mean, we're having a conversation on September 23rd about the Pac-12 CEOs getting together on the 24th on Thursday, deciding about football. This is crazy to me that we're even in this situation, but it is the reality that we're in.
Well, you know, what was also crazy. So, you know, normally something for the Pac-12 tournament, I would normally go and cover it. I don't normally travel for a lot of basketball. I do more for Utah football, but I didn't go to Vegas. But we actually had a TV crew, and one of our writers, Mitch Harper, who covers BYU, he was in Vegas covering the Aggies, the BYU, but they all started a week before the Pac-12, and our boss had them come home 2 days before. They were, you know, the Utes were even supposed to be playing against Oregon State in that opener, and Utah obviously went on to lose that game anyway. So I was just covering it from home, but seeing, you know, what happened. I mean, and yeah, that was a great game where Oregon State hit that 3-pointer, you know, to go ahead late when Utah was, I mean, and then you had Palmer going off for what, 11 threes in that.
That's crazy, man. he couldn't miss. He was terrific. Yeah.
Unbelievable. Which also means that's a bright future for Utah, coming up, you know, for basketball, but just of how
happy birthday, by the way, Larry Koskoviak.
Today. And so, you know, just to see all of that happen, but, you know, I was looking at it from, you know, 1,000-foot view, you know, away, just, and then obviously seeing everything of what you've done on the network through that time. I mean, I don't think we're going to go through anything like this ever again as long as we exist, right?
Yeah. Trevor, I hope to God we never have to deal with anything like this. And, you know, it's really weird because I'm 38. I'm going to be 39 in a couple weeks. And I think all of us have had a lot of time with shelter in place and quarantining to really just sort of think about what we're dealing with, you know, as a society and dealing with a global pandemic and dealing with, you know, a lot of social unrest. And man, it really does put things in perspective. But I had a conversation with Herm Edwards about this maybe 2 months ago. And, you know, you start thinking about different generations and the things that they go through. And, you know, at almost 39, I'd never experienced anything like this, like a global pandemic that shuts everything down. Like this is going to be in the history books. So, you know, I'm like, my kids, my grandkids, they're going to be talking about the situation. And I think big picture, we're going to be talking about it forever, you know, down the road because of what a pandemic really means to a society. But I think at the same time, and having this conversation with Herm Edwards was sort of eye-opening. Like, I think in a lot of ways too, Trevor, this is sort of like a, you know, civil rights movement 2.0. Like, it's just another phase of, you know, potentially some real change that we might see in this country. So, you know, as much as we were reading about Martin Luther King and, you know, Malcolm X and the things that they were trying to accomplish, you know, back in the 60s, you know, I think, you know, 10, 15, 20, 30 years from now, I hope to God we're talking about some real change because of some of the things that have happened in 2020. So you want to try to find the ultimate silver lining. My God, like that, to me, that would be it. You know, having to deal with this global pandemic, but this is as crazy a year that I've ever lived through. And it sounds like the same for you.
There's a question popping up here on Facebook from Nate Dowdle. He says, Mike, you are the best part of the Pac-12 network. Love your work. And by the way, I agree with Nate. And that actually says something because there are some tremendous talent and some tremendous people on that network. And I would agree with what Nate said. You were the best part of it. But what is appreciate the, you know, you and I talked about this off air, but you know, I want to give you kind of the platform to tell people you're still in the business. You're just doing some other ventures. Yeah, you know, tell everybody what you're doing now.
Yeah. You know, so Trevor, still working with Sirius XM radio, actually did a show earlier today with Guy Haberman on Pac-12 radio. So I'll still be a normal regular voice on that channel. I've been working with Intel Sports. I don't know if people have seen, you know, a lot of us are watching a lot of the NFL commercials, but if you've seen Intel's commercials with the NFL and they call it the Spinny Cam, it's one of the new projects that I'm working on with those guys. So super excited about that. And then just signed a contract with NFL Network. So I'll be starting with those guys in late October and certainly, you know, kind of in the mix on some other stuff as well. So you know, Nate, I appreciate you even, you know, taking the time to watch this and to send me that message. And thank you. I appreciate it, man. Like I still, you know, it's weird, man. Like I can even feel myself getting a little emotional and I don't really want to, cause I feel like, you know, it's tough, man. Like, you know, Trevor, I was with the networks, you know, from day one when it launched. I loved my time there. I loved the people that I worked with. It was awesome. It really was. It was, you mentioned some of the people that I had worked with. We had some great, great, great people, and just the amount of laughs. Like, I don't even think people realize when they watch the shows legitimately how much fun we were having. I mean, it was crazy. I was talking to, you know, we were just spending some time talking about basketball. I don't know if you remember Lamar Hurd, who's actually now the analyst for the Blazers, and Kevin O'Neill and Don McLean. You know, we would, you know, on a football Saturday, I think people get this, right? Like, you're in 8 a.m., you're out like 1 in the morning, right? You're there all day, you're watching a lot of these games. And, you know, basketball, it's not as long of a day, but you're there, you know, 13, 14, 15 hours, 16 hours, depending on sort of the way the schedule lays out. I got to tell you, we were in a room called the touchdown room. It was our green room. 8 television monitors. We watched all the games every single Saturday. I'd be in tears. I would be laughing so hard on so many of these Saturdays. And I remember a few weeks, Lamar would be there with Kevin O'Neill. We would finish a day. We'd finish our postgame show at the end of the night when we were there all day. And we'd sit in the green room for another 30, 45 minutes, just laughing and telling stories. And I have never experienced that in my professional career, in my entire life. And I think that's by far what I'm going to miss the most. You know, when McLean was there, we wouldn't stay in the touchdown room. We would go grab a glass of wine after the show with KO. But, you know, it just all that. I mean, the road trips with Yogi, and I know you guys probably had Yogi on your show. Yeah. And you know, all these friends that I've made, it's been, It's awesome. So for Nate to even take the time to send that message, thank you. I really appreciate it, man.
And you know, I've gotten to know a lot of you. I know Yogi, I know Ted, I know Ashley, Kate, Ash, Scott. Yeah. I mean, everybody over there. Yeah. And I mean, you guys have a great group over there. And I know that it hit you hard when all that happened. And you weren't the only one too. I mean, there were a lot of people who were let go from that network. And you know, that was what really made it tick.
Yeah, it's crazy too, because, you know, and I don't know how many people realize this. So I actually was told in April that I wasn't going to be brought back. So they gave me a heads up well in advance. And at that point, they had actually let go of a lot of our production crew. We all sort of found out at the same time. So this is a couple of weeks, really, you know, less than a month I think April 11th was the day that I found out. And then March 11th was when everything shut down. Yeah. So basically a month after the Pac-12 tournament, I knew that I was going to be back. And you mentioned some of those people like Kate Scott and Yogi. Kate checks in on me, you know, every once in a while. Yogi, you know, I'm talking to Yogi almost every day. But like you talk about those friendships and the relationships that you build with people. It's really special, and the connections that they're willing, you know, to help me out. But I got to tell you, Trevor, I mean, what really rocked me was what happened, you know, basically a couple weeks ago when, you know, you're talking about a digital social media team that was let go. And then a lot of my friends, man, it's almost 80 people. I don't know the exact number, but I think it's roughly 80 people. It's been reported that got furloughed. That's tough, man. You know, I got friends who have, you know, married with kids, producers, you know, just some of my best friends work there. So like, that's hard. And I don't want to make this a Pac-12 thing because, mm-hmm. you know, Trevor, the finances, I mean, I know what's happening on Utah's campus, Mark Harley. I mean, the whole damn athletic department, everyone's furloughed, you know, and this is not, I don't want to make this a conference thing or a network thing. There's a lot of really great, talented people that work in college sports that are hurting right now. Seeing it on the campus level, you know, and I just brought up the network just because I was associated with it. I've been there, and it's my friends who are not working right now. So if anyone is really anticipating a decision on a return to play tomorrow by the CEOs, I could tell you, man, like I can't wait, because all I want is for my friends to be getting that check again and not have that stress and the anxiety associated with paying your bills, because people, what is it, like 40 million, 30 million people that are unemployed right now? Like, this is a crappy deal, man. It's a crappy time for a lot of people. And I think that's also why I'm so appreciative of the support that I've gotten, because I know how down I was. And it's like this, it's an emotional roller coaster, and I don't like roller coasters. And it's, you know, I was fortunate because I have had people check in on me and people that have been willing to say some really nice things about my work. It means the world, because you start doubting yourself too. Like, you start going, maybe I'm not as good as I thought I was, or, you know, like, you just start doubting your ability a little bit, which I think is normal. But the support's been amazing. And I think there's a lot of people right now that could use that support. Number one, and number two, man, I want to see people back to work.
One more question about this, and then we'll move on to some other Pac-12 topics. Nate mentioned in here, so say that, and I'm guessing we're going to get an answer as to, and that it's not a matter of if, it's when we're going to have, you know, Pac-12 football back. Are you going to go back to the Pac-12 network?
Great question. You know, a couple of my bosses back in the summer had asked if I'd be willing to go back as a freelancer. And I told them 100%. I mean, there's, you know, I have my relationships with the coaches and the players. I mean, I'm thrilled, right? Like Justin Herbert, you know, the other weekend, I get to see him ball out. I see Joshua Kelly in that line. Like, this is awesome. This is awesome to see some of these guys. So I don't know if there's a spot for me, to be honest with you. At this point, if they called, of course I'd be interested in doing some stuff again. But I think I was only going to go back if there were multiple games on the network on a Saturday. And to be honest, Trevor, you know, and I know we're going to dive into it, I don't know if there's going to be enough inventory to have two games on Pac-12 network. You know, they're talking about a 6-game or 7-game conference schedule starting in October on Halloween. And I hope it starts then, because I think then we have that conversation about being included in the college football playoff. How likely is it? You know, you play in November. I don't know if the CFP is willing to push their game back to buy some time. So, you know, it's an interesting development, but I guess the short answer is interested for sure. Likely. I don't know how likely that is at this point.
Well, for me, I would love to see you back on the network because I think appreciate you and Yogi are a tremendous team.
He's the
tremendous
best.
Duo.
Yogi's going to be there, man. He's going to be calling games. He's going to be crushing it. He's going to be with Ted on a lot of those broadcasts. So, like, the coverage, you know, and this goes back to my friends who work there. Like, they're going to do an awesome job, whether I'm there or not. Like, they're going to crush it. And you guys know this. It's not just me who knows the stories and what's happening in the league. Yogi is prepared as any person I've ever worked with in my entire career. Ash is going to be on point. She knows what the hell is going on in this conference. Kate Scott's, you know, tremendous. Our analysts know, you know, Ali Odie's been there, Nigel Burton. Like, we have a great crew. Evan Moore, I don't want to miss anyone's name, but like the coverage
there's
is
a lot of them. There's a lot of good ones.
Yeah. There. We got a great crew and the crew is going to do an amazing job. There's no doubt in my mind.
Okay. Now, a week ago, the other Power Five conference decided to start up football beginning next month, and that is the Big Ten. That was when it finally sparked the conversation within the Pac-12 to get rolling. Now, I'm just going to be blunt here with you. There's a lot of people out there who say that basically the Pac-12 follows the lead of the Big Ten. Do you feel that way?
Hard not to, based off of what we've seen, right? I mean, look, just call a spade here. And it, I think if the timing was a little bit different, maybe you have a different conclusion, but you know, the decision to postpone the season to 2021, that comes, a couple hours after the Big Ten makes their announcement. I think what's really interesting, Trevor, about the timing of all this is September 3rd, if I'm not mistaken, is when the conference announces and Larry Scott does, you know, a webinar online and we're all watching it. And it's this partnership with Quidel, the testing company, and that's September 3rd. And yet on September 16th, that's when the Big Ten makes its announcement that they're playing early. At that point, the ball all of a sudden gets rolling. Like, and maybe it was rolling previously, but I didn't hear about any of this stuff. So, you know, John Wilner, who covers the conference, he had tweeted something which I thought was kind of interesting. It was 7 a.m. Big Ten makes their announcement. 7 p.m. USC and UCLA are in conversations with local county officials, health officials in LA about getting back on campus and practicing. I'm thinking to myself, wait a second, like what the timing, like what, like, do we need the Big Ten to start doing that?
24 hours.
And I don't know, like I said, I don't work in the building anymore. You know, so I couldn't tell you. I would assume that those conversations were happening shortly after the testing announcement and the relationship, but it's weird to see publicly we don't know about it until the Big Ten makes their announcement. And clearly there's a relationship. I mean, we've seen it over the years with the Rose Bowl and that game. And I think the Pac-12, to be honest with you, and I've said this on SiriusXM, I think the Pac-12 actually needs the Big Ten more than the Big Ten needs the Pac-12 with regard to scheduling. Like, Larry Scott had said this, and he's been on record, and I agree with him, and that's this idea of scheduling with the Big Ten. I think that would have been ideal. If you weren't going to roll with the other three Power Five leagues, then why the hell not? You might as well attach yourself to the Big Ten. I think the Pac-12 actually needs the Big Ten more is because, let's be real here. Look, I've been on the West Coast for almost 10 years, and there is a bias against this conference. I mean, and hell, you know this. I've been on you know, shows that, Trevor, you've worked on before, talking about how Utah should have been getting more credit and more national love a year ago. And it didn't happen. Now, towards the end, they certainly were in that conversation for a college football playoff spot. But, you know, Oregon is the favorite in the league this year. And Oregon is a national brand. I would give them that.
Oh, yeah.
But I got to tell you, man, like, is anyone going to doubt Ohio State next year? You know, let's just say, and I shouldn't say next year because no one's doubting them this year. But I guess my point is, if they weren't playing in 2020 and they were going to play in 2021 with the Pac-12, no one was going to say that Ohio State doesn't deserve or doesn't belong or can't compete or couldn't win a national championship. Not one person would ever doubt that. But I do think that there would be doubts on the best teams in the Pac-12, whoever that team was going to be. So I felt like the Pac-12 needed the Big Ten from that perspective, because I think there's a certain level of credibility that league gets, that nationally, that narrative that they get that the Pac-12 doesn't. So I love the fact that the Pac-12 is pushing along, but I will say this, man, I hope it's safe. I really do, because the league, I applauded them, Trevor, and they deserve a lot of credit, because it is not an easy decision to make for those school presidents to say, we're not playing football. Mark Harlan, the AD at Utah, said 50 to 60 million is what they're losing. From a financial standpoint, it makes no sense to not play. I mean, everyone should want to play from a financial perspective, and this is bigger than just the finances of it. But that's a really hard decision. And you want to tell me about player safety, health and safety, and well-being? The Pac-12 clearly is on that path. Now, are you going to be able to safely return is the biggest question. And the daily testing, in my mind, that's the biggest reason why it should be okay to get back onto the football field.
You touched on some really good points there, and I wanted to follow up with, so when that deal came down for the rapid testing, it happened on the 20 days ago. The way I look at it is, okay, the ball starts rolling after the Big Ten makes the announcement, and you know, you already mentioned that it kind of goes coincide with that, but one of the things that Larry said after the whole testing was trying to get, you know, approval from California and Oregon governments to allow contact practices, which is half your league. So you can't go without half your league, but why not get the ball rolling and talking to those governors to try and get, you know, approval, exemptions, or whatever you will.
So two things on that. One, I agree with you 100%, right? Like if you make that announcement on September 3rd, you gotta get that ball rolling. Mm-hmm. I don't know, Trevor, if the ball wasn't rolling. I have no idea. I had reached out to someone on the conference side and said, are these conversations, were they happening? And the response was, it's fair to assume those conversations were happening. Cool. Okay. So maybe they were. We don't hear about it though until September 16th, though, until the Big Ten makes their announcement. So that's one phase of it. So you're right there. I think one other really important distinction here that not everyone outside of the state of California and Oregon fully grasp, and that is this idea of not only the numbers with the pandemic, which are horrific, and California specifically, I can't speak to Oregon. I don't really know totally the numbers that they're dealing with. But in California, the numbers were not great. But the fires were horrific. I mean, we are talking about millions of acres that have burned. And unless you live here, I think people have seen the pictures on social media. I don't even know if I had posted anything. I mean, Trevor, like it was orange outside. I mean, it was legitimately, it looked like a friggin' movie. And it was the same thing up in Oregon. So if you want to tell me the governor, Kate Brown in Oregon and Gavin Newsom in California have some other things that they're worried about, I'm not going to hate on that. And I understand it. I totally understand it. We couldn't go outside, man. I had been sleeping with my windows closed. I mean, if I showed you, if I moved my computer and brought it, I mean, there's on the windowsill. I mean, there's ash inside my apartment and even outside now. I mean, it was pretty bad. You couldn't really breathe. It was dangerous. You know, the Oregon Ohio State game, they weren't going to be able to play that game. You know, that there, you know, the air quality, the AQI number was, you know, I was looking at it, it was like in the 300s. You know, keep in mind, safety is like anything under 100, you know, 200 is ridiculous. And then 300 is like, I mean, that's like, you know, putting your head above a smokestack. I mean, it's just not safe. So I think those governors were dealing with other things, and it wasn't a high priority for them. And I understand that, and I can appreciate that. But at the same time, the fires were still going on September 20th, and they're still going on at this point, not as much in Oregon. So I can't speak, Trevor, to what's happened at the government level or the local level. I know everyone's stressed because things aren't totally reopened, but, you know, publicly, we just haven't, the transparency hasn't totally been there. And I think that's why people like you and me, certainly, and other writers all over the West Coast are questioning sort of this timeline and like, what's it going to take to get these kids back compliant?
Now, obviously, there's a big meeting with the presidents and chancellors tomorrow. What answers do you think we're going to get tomorrow? I mean, obviously, when they're going to start the season, but what kind of answers do you think we're going to get tomorrow? And what are some of the answers do you think we're going to get maybe in the coming weeks?
Yeah, I think number one, we're going to find out that they're going to play. That I do. I think the two biggest questions are we all playing together on the 31st or the 7th? Or are the teams that are ready, are we going to get that staggered start October 31st for some teams and November 7th for others? You know what I would love to see here, and I don't know where we net out on this, Trevor, how much extra preparation do you need, right? Like I talked to Chase Garbers today at Cal, and he says, oh, you know, we've been working out individually, cohorts of no more than 12 people. But I do feel like, hey, we're, you know, it's going to take a few weeks for us to get on the same page. Herm Edwards earlier this week, 5 to 6 weeks is what he had said. Kyle Whittingham, I think if you asked him, Trevor, he'd say, I'm ready to play tomorrow. I mean, that dude wants to just get out there. And I get that. You know, there's a world that exists. So Utah, Colorado, the Arizona schools, right? Like they've been able to probably practice a little bit more. Yeah. I mean, than the California and the Oregon schools.
You're 12 hours a week, you know.
Yeah.
Per se.
So why not let those dudes play each other? Can you front load the schedule? And look, if everyone's playing on the 31st, great. But maybe the teams that have had a little bit of extra time, maybe you front load their schedules first and they play each other, and the California schools and the Oregon schools, maybe they play each other first so that there's this level of equality after a couple weeks where there's at least some game action. I don't know. I'm just trying to think about how do we make it the most fair as possible. And, you know, the reality is it's not going to be completely fair. It's just not. And that's 2020. And let's just play, let's roll the balls out and let's get it going. So, but I think those would be the two questions. It's, we are going to play. When are we going to play? And is it going to be that staggered start, or is everyone rolling together on the 31st?
What would be the ideal amount of games if they were to come to you and say, hey, Mike, we're wondering how many games would be ideal for these teams to play and to, you know, get ready and to try and get it in. And also with the college football playoff, you know, in that motion.
For sure. For sure.
It's ideal.
Yeah. I mean, right now they're talking about six or seven, to be honest with you. I don't think six is just not enough. Six is straight money grab. And that's fine too. Cause I get the financial aspects of this, but I would prefer to see, like, if you play seven and the championship game, is that enough of that data point that you need for the college football playoff? I would love nothing more than for Larry Scott, the athletic directors, and the coaches in this conference to be so vocal, social media, go on every radio show, every TV show you can, and say, hey, CFP, include everyone. We're in a global pandemic. I get it. Those guys have been playing. SEC is about to kick off. Like, no. We're seeing cancellations. Can't we extend this thing out a couple weeks? Just so that we all have the same data points. By the way, and I've heard this being discussed, Trevor, this is probably not the best forum to do this, but when I hear about data points, I think to myself, okay, why is it? Now, if you're going to tell me, hey, you know, the SEC and the ACC, they're playing more games. They're playing maybe two more games, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, there's nothing that the Pac-12 or really the Big Ten can do about that. Fine. But why is it every single year we're talking about data points? Does it work in the favor of the Pac-12 that they're playing an extra conference game? No. They might say it does, but clearly, I mean, based off of the results that we're seeing, generally speaking, it hasn't necessarily worked in their favor. So I just love that, you know, there's that old phrase, you can make any statistic work depending on the argument. I would love for there to be some sort of reasonable action taken where we just say, you know what, we're going to push this bad boy out a couple weeks. Dabo came out and said, hey, I don't want to wait for the Big Ten. I get it. I wouldn't either. But, you know, for the good of the sport, does it make some sense to maybe push things back a little bit, especially as we're seeing games get canceled? And I think that's the other thing, Trevor. Like if the Pac-12 is able to extend out maybe an extra couple weeks, and December 19th isn't the championship game, and you're able to add a couple more, then you have those data points. But maybe the rest of the other Power Fives come back to the pack a little bit in terms of scheduling because of cancellations. Maybe everyone nets out at the same end, or at least relatively speaking, a similar end within a week or two of each other. And we're all playing roughly the same amount of games. To me, that seems reasonable. And I would love for that to happen.
Well, and you know, in any other year, when you're talking about the teams down south who only have eight conference games, and in the Pac-12 it's nine, in those four non-conference games, they're playing teams that, you know, there's hardly any challenge in there. I know that the Trojans and Tide were supposed to play in 2020, but other than that, Alabama, you know,
and they're playing like Auburn, you know, they're playing FCS teams, FCS teams the week before the rivalry game. And by the way, Trevor, I'm not going to hate on it. It works for them. They have perception and the narrative working in their favor. Why would I want to play an extra conference game and guaranteed more losses in my league? I wouldn't. I get it. And they don't have to. They do not have to. That's why I would love, you know, we've all debated this internally, and we've all gone back and forth with our analysts. Like, I'm like, yo, screw it. I'd rather play one less game in the league. Like, I just would. You know, I think we'd be talking about Oregon last year playing in the playoff. You know, the week they go down to ASU and they lose in Tempe, that's the week that Alabama's playing like South Alabama or something like that. I mean, to me, like, that's not, you know, we value zeros in the loss column more than tougher schedules. Sorry. Like, that's just my personal opinion on how those committees have gone with it the last couple of years. So if that means we got to make our schedule a little bit more manageable, whatever. I'm cool with it. I just want teams in the deal, man.
Well, and not only that, I felt like the winner of Utah and Oregon in that championship game last year, I felt like one of them should have gone into the playoff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because Oregon showed, and they showed in their Rose Bowl game, that they're legit. And that they could have competed. They had a great quarterback, a great running back. I mean, Justin Herbert didn't have to do much to Utah's defense. And that was one of the things going into the game was who would give in first? Would it be Utah's D-line or Oregon's O-line? Yeah. It was one of those things. And obviously it showed with Oregon, you know, really taking it to Utah. But I just feel like, is that something that Larry Scott is going to have to change as far as the amount of conference games in order to align with them? Or are we going to have to wait till, you know, the other conferences align with what the Pac-12 is doing?
The league's not going to go to 8 games. They're going to stick with what they have right now. And I get it. And it's going to be incumbent on those other conferences to mandate that. I know we've always talked about this fictitious, college football czar that could help, you know, even out some things, especially, you know, be a leader in a really tough time with COVID and create protocol and all those types of things. Like, to me, that's a part of it. It's how do you standardize the assessment of the college football playoff when they're looking at a lot of these teams? David Shaw has said this a bunch of times. We've had him on the shows that we were doing at Pac-12 Network, and it's just not apples to apples. It's apples to oranges when you do these comparisons based off of the schedule. So I would love to see everyone play the same amount of games, but the league is not going to drop down. They're not going to drop down. They're going to stick with what they got.
Yeah, and I figured that was the case. Some questions coming in. Yeah. Madison, she already asked the question about the meeting tomorrow, but she also says she misses you on the Pac-12 Network.
Appreciate it, Madison.
And then another one from Kyle Ireland. He asked, assuming the Pac-12 chooses to play football in the fall, which we all think is going to happen, who do you see in Pac-12 championship game?
Well, right now, you know, I felt like Oregon is the favorite in the conference. I'm hedging a little bit. I think they came closer to the pack. No pun intended there. You know, Penei Sewell is, I would have made the case, he's the best player in the conference. So you're obviously going to take a hit. That was an offensive line that now has no returning starters. Now, granted, Mario Cristobal, that's his unit. And if you've been to those practices with him there, he's on it, man. He's as good as it gets. But then defensively, you know, a couple of secondary, Norris certainly comes to mind. He opted out. You know, that's the other thing that people aren't really talking a ton about. The fact that you told your university's 2021 and a school like Oregon sent their players home, those dudes opted out. Like, I can't help but think that maybe we don't get some of those opt-outs if you know, the timing was a little bit different on a return to play. Now, granted, that's not totally can't point the finger totally on anyone in that situation, but it is a factor here. But I think Oregon still is the team in the North. And I think the South is still sort of open there. I think what's going to be really interesting to me is there is in a short period of time in terms of preparation for the season and a shorter schedule, Trevor, it's what do you like more, an explosive offense or a dominant defense? And to me, what USC has in terms of personnel at their offense is going to be ridiculous this year. So I think, you know, not, it sounds like chalk. I do think that there's an opportunity for Cal to creep in. We'll see what Jimmy's going to do. In Seattle, you just can never count out a Kyle Whittingham team. And I think Herm's got some guys as well. They had a lot of injuries on their offensive line a season ago. And I think, you know, between guys getting healthy / getting experience that were young, I don't think they had, I'd have to go through my notes. If I'm not mistaken, though, I think they had one upperclassman on their offensive line who was hurt for a good stretch of the year. And then no other, I think everyone else were freshmen and sophomores on their offensive line. Like, that's an issue. And now that gets a little bit better, and they have a great quarterback as well. And I think that's another way to assess it. Who are the teams that don't have a lot of change? And it's change at a really important position. So it's quarterback, it's head coach, and then at your coordinator spot. So to me, it's that those would be a couple of those factors. But the longest winded answer to Oregon and USC right now is the two teams that I would pick.
All right. Now let's spin it around to Utah because we haven't really talked about them yet, but you've also been really gracious with your time, and I really do appreciate it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Kyle's team, as we saw last year, really good. Probably could have gone into the college football playoff had they been
historically great defense, man.
And the thing is, too, is that also on offense, it was Tyler Huntley, Zach Moss, who's the career leading rusher in school history. They lost a lot of talent.
Yeah.
But they've also been able to reload a little bit. But the you know, no one can really count out Kyle's defenses until they actually have a bad year. But what are your thoughts when you look at Utah, at least right now?
I think the last thing you said is the one that that comment resonates the most with me, which is you never count out a Kyle Whittingham team. I remember 2 years ago being in Salt Lake City for the opener. We had it on Pac-12 Network. And I was talking to Kyle and I'm looking at his roster and I'm looking at all these different players. And I had asked him, and it was probably not the best question to ask Kyle, but I said, man, you ever think about your team 2 years from now? Like, cause that roster was littered with sophomores and juniors. And then all of a sudden last year's team is juniors and seniors. And, you know, he gave me the smile, like barely, but it was like a very, no, like we're worried about the season. I get it. But yeah, like,
there isn't a ton of smiling with Kyle.
No, but I think deep down, like he knew what I was getting at, which is like, mm-hmm. Yo, this team's going to be like, they're going to be studs. And they were last year. They were terrific. And this close to winning a Pac-12 championship, this close to being in a college football playoff. But I remember being at Levi's, we were on the set and I was talking to our crew. We were doing the show. And I'd said, even in year one, Kyle Whittingham's teams, they have never been a doormat in this league. They haven't. And I think it's a testament to the job that he's done. He's one of the premier coaches in the entire country, doesn't get enough credit for what he's able to accomplish. But I think that the way he builds his teams, it's always been in the trenches. And he's talked about it publicly, like this exposure that he's gotten and being in this conference, like they've been able to recruit better. Now, all of a sudden, they've had success the last couple of years. You know, we did a signing day show. My God, like he's bringing in dudes that, quite honestly, maybe 8-9 years ago, like they're not considering Salt Lake City. And I think that the trajectory is up here, but you mentioned the loss and the attrition that they've had from last season. Like that's going to be an issue for this team. I do remember, you know, asking some of the coaches off the record around the conference, like, what are those road trips that you hate? Like, who do you not like playing? And the vast majority of the coaches over the years have said Kyle's teams in Salt Lake City. So kudos to the Mus handling business there and making it hard on opposition. But I think the physical nature in which they play their games is really telling. And I think when I talk to other coaches and that's what their response is off the record, like, yeah, that goes to show you that this team is a juggernaut. Do I think, look, Trevor, you're going to ask me to make a pick. Like I can't rationally come up with a reason right now where I'd pick Utah over USC. You just can't. Like on paper, if I look at it objectively, I won't do that. If it happens, am I surprised? No, but you know, in terms of my job, like I can't just go with, you know, the pick from the heart or, you know, a gut feeling. Like you got to look at some of the evidence. You got to look at returning personnel that's there. And I think there's just too much loss right now to expect this Utah team to be where they were a season ago. Not to say they were not going to be there in 2 years from now. But that quarterback room is probably the best it's been maybe in the 25 years that Kyle's been on that team with that team.
Now, another thing that Utah has going for him coming up in the season, whenever it happens, is the quarterback play. They bring in a grad transfer in Jake Bentley, who played, you know, some sure. highly powered football against some really good teams down in the South. And then you have Cam Rising, who came in from Texas as a transfer, sat out a year, but he was alongside sure. Andy Ludwig up in the box for home games. As you go through that, who would you say kind of has that upper hand to start? Because Utah only had 3 spring practices, which we know that that's crucial in spring is to get the new guys developed. But then you're also having probably a very minimized training camp now, whenever that is going to be. Where do you kind of go as far as quarterback play?
You know, I am the last dude to answer that question. And I'll tell you why here, because I think Kyle doesn't care what anyone on the outside of this program thinks about the decisions he's going to make. And I respect that. And I think it's a testament to consistency at that helm. Like Kyle's not worried about job security, right? They lose a couple of games. Like Kyle knows he's still going to be okay. That's not the luxury that a lot of coaches in the country have, and he's earned it. But when I think about quarterback decisions, a couple of years ago, he makes the call to go with Tyler. I thought Troy was going to be the guy, you know, like here's a dude, has some reps, has some experience, has won some games in this conference. And all of a sudden it's like, yo, Tyler's out there and Tyler's balling. And it was a great call. And Tyler was the right decision, even though I think people questioned whether or not that was going to happen. The more people that I talked to that season, people did not anticipate Tyler Huntley being the starting quarterback. And here it was, he goes out, he balls out. And then last year they're knocking on the door. And I think it's also, you know, you think about player development, and actually maybe I can even find this while I'm talking, but I think about generally speaking what Utah and Kyle has done with his staff. I saw a crazy stat Sorry, I'm just opening up my iPad here. Maybe I can find it here. My notes from our signing days and all of our draft stuff is kind of all over the place. But there's a stat and – oh, here we go. So from 2017 – oh, excuse me. In the 4 years spanning 2013 to 2016, Utah recruited just four-star guys in those four seasons, 2013 to 2016. Utah has 21 of its players from 2017 through 2020. So that's a four-year period after. So four-star guys, 2013 to 2016, and then 21 guys drafted from 2017 to 2020. If that doesn't speak to understanding personnel, how do you develop them and making the right decisions, there's no other stat that I can give any fan on that one. It is a remarkable thing what's happening in Salt Lake City with that football program. And I'm, by the way, shocked that I found that stat as quickly as I did. Like, I mean, like my notes on my iPad are all over the place, but I'm glad I was able to get that in.
Yeah. And it's definitely a very, very, you know, crazy stat where Kyle's able to, you know, continue to develop and, you know, they don't have to be four or any five-star guys. And, you know, he brings in three stars, but I want to end on this. I want to give you a chance to talk to all the Ute fans who's tuning in here and anyone who follows the conference and followed your career, just to give them any kind of message right now as we go into the season.
Yeah. Well, number one, Trevor, appreciate you having me on the show. It's always nice to talk about this conference. I got to tell you, and I think it was Nate who had wrote the comment in a little bit earlier, and mm-hmm. I could even feel sort of like the emotions kind of rise, and I had to squash them a little bit. I got to tell you, man, I loved being at Pac-12 Network for the 8 years. It was the best time of my professional career. And I've been so lucky. I've had so many great experiences, Sirius Radio where I am now. And that's actually where I started my career after I graduated college, but NBA TV, ESPN, like the group that we have together, these are lifelong friends. The worst part is to not be able to be on these campuses, doing some of these shows, being in those meetings with those coaches, interacting with a lot of these student athletes, the administrators. I mean, people don't even realize, man, just how much talent. And Paul Kirk and Trevor, you probably know Paul pretty well, as good as it comes in this conference. You know, the ADs have been terrific to deal with. Like I'm really going to miss that. But, you know, at the end of the day, I wasn't even sure if I should even post something that I was going to, you know, that I wasn't going to be at the network, but the conference sent out an email to our staff when my contract was up and not everyone knew. So I felt like I should at least say something. I did not anticipate the type of reaction that I got. You know, full disclosure, man, I definitely teared up more than a few times reading those comments. I'm pretty sure I responded to everyone. It took me a couple days to do that, but you know, I looked at every response as someone taking the time to wish me well. They watched, you know, for the 8 years. Cannot thank everyone enough, man. It was awesome. It was really awesome. And I understand that it's a privilege to be invited into people's living rooms. And that's really what it was. Cause hell, man, we've all been home the last 6 months watching a lot of television. You know, I don't watch everything. I watch a lot now. But I do understand that people have a lot of choices out there. So for anyone who is watching over the 8 years, seriously, can't thank you enough. And, hopefully at some point everyone's paths will cross again. And just the support's been, it's been mind blowing. So just thank you to everyone.
I know that you have someone who will take you to lunch when you come back to Salt Lake City. Yeah. I'd definitely love to connect when this whole pandemic's done. And
oh, for
and,
sure, man.
And we can go out. And,
well,
you know,
you're friends with OC. I got to tell you, man, I'm like almost mad at him. So Moochies, right, in Salt Lake City. Mm-hmm. Is it okay that I just gave them? Oh, I already did. I gave him a plug. I had lunch with OC there. You got to be kidding me, man. Those meatball like sandwiches. Mm-hmm. Dude, I literally still think about it. I mean, I just was texting with Sean the other day. I'm like, yo, we have to go back there. I love it there. So, Trevor, I'm going to be there with OC. You roll with us, and we'll have a good time, man. But I love that place for sure. It's like the East Coast, you know, subs that I used to get growing up as a kid. So it's kind of awesome.
It doesn't get a lot better than that. But, Mike, I really do thank you so much for taking all this time. And I definitely want to get you on throughout the season. You know, once we start talking about football rather than a pandemic that is stopping football.
For sure. For sure. No, I'm in whenever you need me. And seriously, thanks for having me on the show.
All right. That'll do it for this edition of the Crimson Corner Podcast live edition. Big thanks to Mike Yam. Thank you guys for tuning in to KSLSports.com.